Hey everyone, Dick Frost here, host of On the Throne podcast, excited to announce that today's episode is a paid sponsorship brought to you in part by BetterHelp. As a man in the blue-collar world who experiences mental health and was recently diagnosed with BPD, I'm really excited to be using my platform to give back to my community. Working away from home for weeks or months at a time can be really hard mentally and physically, and for some, talking to our friends and family can be really overwhelming. As the largest online therapy provider in the world, BetterHelp can provide access to mental health professionals with a diverse variety of expertise. They'll get you the tools to manage your stress and your anxiety. Visit betterhelp.com/frostyd today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/frostyd. Can you hear the music?
That's good. I like it.
Yeah. A lot of people can't hear it, man. Actually been a part of the charm of the podcast, you know, half people being able to hear it, half not.
Yeah. That's a nice intro.
Fuck yeah, I'm trying to get lyrics added to it.
That's fair.
All right, welcome back to another episode of On the Throne with Dick, and shout out to Senjin Boychuk for that incredible intro, outro music. You know, you can find that guy everywhere on the socials. Pretty talented guy, and he's coming back on soon. Hopefully we're gonna get lyrics added to it, like I was just saying. But yeah, shout out to him. On this week's episode of the podcast, man, I'm pretty excited to have Tanner on. You know, that sober roughneck. What's going on, buddy?
Not a whole lot. I'm excited to be here. This is gonna be a good one. I can feel it.
Hell yeah, man. Yeah, I can feel it too, man. I've been talking to you for a bit, you know, and, you know, just the more I watch your videos and stuff and the more I talk to you, you know, like the more I just, hey, let's get this guy on the podcast. You know, he's a pretty solid guy, and you're pretty young too, aren't you?
Yeah, I'll be 26 here in 19 days. So.
Fuck, man, just 25, yeah. Bro. Man, I'm about 10 years older than you now. I'm 36, just turned 36 a couple months ago, man. Like, oh, yeah. Looking, time's flying, man. You know, and I was, oh shit. So I was 22 when I got into the patch.
Yep.
Man, you know, one day you're 22, you're wet behind the ears, you think you got life by the balls, and then you blink and you've been in the patch almost 20 years, and yeah. You know, fucking, you don't have life by the balls, you know.
No,
and really it's got you by the balls. So but yeah. we're still having a good time, you know.
Yeah, no, for sure. That's one thing I noticed when I started out here is time definitely, it's a different concept out here. It flies a lot quicker when you're out on the job for 3 weeks at a time, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. And I see that a lot in how I see my kids' age, right? Like, you know, at the beginning of the pandemic, I say it a lot, but at the beginning of the pandemic, I was gone for 6 months at a time, right? I'd leave for work and my daughter wasn't, you know, walking all the way or wasn't saying certain things or, you know, wasn't quite in this part of her development yet. And I come home and all of a sudden, you know, she's running or she's saying certain things. And yeah, man, that's tough. You know, watching time fly like that through a FaceTime. And then, you know, you come home, walk through the door and it kicks you in the face.
Yeah, for sure. I've definitely seen that with my brother. He was actually out here a couple of years before me working in the patch, and he has two kids. And initially he was doing the drive back from Vancouver out to Alberta, like every time he'd get days off, and just hearing the stories of how hard that was on him and then his family and stuff. Eventually he did move like his girlfriend and their daughter up with him. But
yeah,
I can't imagine doing it with kids. I don't think I could do it, to be honest.
I never understood it, right? When I was younger, when I was a younger guy with no kids in the patch, I was married, and you know what? I never understood it. You know, sacrificing for my wife and my dog, you know, and yeah. I'm like, oh, I don't get it. But you have kids, man, and you really start to feel it, right? And right now I'm off work it's 6 weeks and 2 days now. So by the time this podcast is out, 6 weeks and 4 days. So, you know, I broke my ankle and dislocated a couple bones, And, you know, it happened, you know, they say the first day on rotation and the last day on rotation are the two most dangerous days of your hitch, right? And yeah. It happened my first day back within the first hour. So, you know, it was, you know, exactly that. And, you know, 6 weeks has flown by, man, you know, and you don't even have to be on the job right now for time to fly anymore, right? You know, I'm at home and technically I'm doing a lot of modified duties. I'm getting, you know, all that done, but I'm sitting here on the couch, man. I've been on the couch for 6 weeks, man. And I'm like, no way, this is crazy. Like going outside and getting some, it's been nice the last couple of days. So I've been able to go outside and sit outside in the sun and soak up the rays and stuff. And time's just fine, you know?
Yeah, no, it's a double-edged sword though, I find, because I love my schedule. I love what I do, but I remember when we got 2 weeks off at Christmas there, we got just over 2 weeks. And right as we were hitting, I think it was day 13, I was like, you know what? I need to go back to work. Like, I'm starting to go stir crazy here. Like, 2 weeks off at a time is too much time, I find.
My daughter, a couple of years ago at Christmas time, she was five. Was it five? Yeah, five. Was it last? Maybe it was living last Christmas. She could have been six. So maybe one of the Christmases that just passed anyway, not this one, but I was home for 2 weeks at Christmas time and my kids aren't used to having me home that much. Right.
Yeah.
And my oldest daughter and I were getting on each other's nerves. Right. And she looks at me, she was only five at the time, man. She looks at me, she's like, isn't it time for you to go back to work yet? Right? Like, oh my God, man. Like, yeah. Is it time for you to go back to school? You know what I mean? Like, leave the fuck alone, right?
Yeah. And,
you know, it's funny. It's funny. This time home, being home for this 6 weeks so far, and I've got a few more to go with physio and stuff. We've been able to, you know, grow our relationship, right? You know, my daughter and I, she's seven. I've been on the road her whole life. And, you know, for the most part, it's been her and her mom, you know, for a good 2.5 years of that before my other daughter was born. But so, you know, I'm not her safe space, right? She sees me as this guy who just comes and goes to work.
Yeah.
And she understands that I go and do that because my wife has told her, hey, you know, the house we live in, the toys you play with, the trips we take. And the fact that I'm allowed to stay home and be a stay-at-home mom with you so you don't have to go to daycare, that's because your dad works hard for us. And she understands that, but I'm still not her safe space. She'd rather not be alone with me. But these last 6 weeks, man, she'll come downstairs. She'll hang out with me. She brings me water. She brings me food. She sits in my lap. And you know, we've been able to bond, right? And it's kind of nice. It's been kind of nice.
Yeah, that's really nice. Yeah. I don't know. When I first came out to the patch, I don't know. I wasn't really thinking about kids too much, but I'm getting to that age where I'm like, I want to have kids for sure. And I don't want to be like, I don't know. When did you have your first kid? I don't want to have like kids when I'm in like my mid 30s or late 30s. Right. I want to kind of.
So yeah, I'm 36. My daughter, I believe, was 29 when I was born.
Okay.
And my other daughter was 32. I was 32 when she was born.
Yeah.
And now my wife and I are trying for a 31. We're trying for another one right now.
Okay.
And being home for the last 6 weeks, you know, I've been getting really good at one-legged thrusting. So yeah.
Oh yeah.
One-legged thrusting, man. It's wild.
Yeah. No, I was talking about it recently with a friend, and I'm like, I'd like to have kids in the next 3 years if possible, but also with that plan, you know, coming to the patch, it's a lifestyle, right? And there's a certain mentality in the patch.
Yeah.
And I remember when I was really green and I first started, I was talking to my push and I was like, yeah, I'm only coming. I'm staying for 4 years. And he's like, that's what I said too. But I'm like, I got to lock in on that because I went to school for firefighting. That's my passion. And I don't know if I can do this style of life and have a family. I don't know if that's for me, right? So
yeah, I came in with a 5-year plan 13 years ago, right? Like I came in with goals. I want to make all this money and I want to save this much and I want to buy a house and I want to do this. I set those goals. That was a 5-year plan and I I accomplished most of those within the first 2 to 3 years. I remember my first oil field paycheck. I was in Grand Prairie, and my coworker, I was talking to him, and I hadn't been paid yet. And I'm like, man, I gotta buy my wife some flowers. You know, I gotta buy her some flowers on payday. Say sorry for being gone. He's like, flowers, bro. Buy her a car, you know? And I'm like, buy her a car? What do you mean? He's like, oh, you'll see, right? And, you know, this was, you know, 13 years ago when oil money, you know, went a little further. We weren't taxing hard, right? Yeah. So I got my first paycheck a few days later, and I'm like, fuck, I'm buying my wife a car, right? Yeah. I went home one day's off a few days after that, and I remember for the first time, I took my wife out to the keg. We went out for a nice dinner. We spent $300 at the keg. Mm-hmm. We spent $300 at the keg. I took her out to a movie. I bought the Harry Potter 82 disc special edition set that came in the big trunk and shit. And I paid all my bills, and I still had money left over. I'm like, what the fuck is this, man? That's crazy, right? Yeah. And wow, yeah. So I set all my goals, you know, pretty early. And then I was like, well, now I got to make new goals, right? Now I got to set new ones. And, you know, new goals were accomplished and crushed. And, you know, you set more. Next thing you know, you're staring down the barrel of 20 years, right? And
That's true. It is the money is very enticing, and the lifestyle that comes with it, if you're smart with it, it's very nice.
Yeah.
I grew up in Vancouver, BC, and it's an expensive city, right? It's I always lived within the city limits, whether it was outside of Vancouver, like a little bit further, but they're always cities, right? So you're driving everywhere. The gas prices are through the roof. And I remember when I moved out to my first place, I could barely make rent work. And I was working just like your 9 to 5. I think I was making $20 an hour. And I thought that was pretty good at my age. By all circumstances, it looked like I was doing pretty good at my age because I had got my own place at like 19 or whatever, right? A lot of my friends are still living at home. But then over the last like 4 years of that, inflation hit, and you know, I had to move with the times, and I got into construction landscape, and I started making a little bit more money. But then I was looking at it, and I'm like, okay, I'm making, you know, 60K a year, and I'm still living paycheck to paycheck. Like, what's going on here? Like, my biggest thing growing up was I would talk to my parents, and they'd be like, yeah, we bought our first house at this age, and then we bought our second house at this age, and they're like the third house at this age. And I'm like sitting here like, how do you do that in today's like economy? As someone who's from Vancouver, I was like, it's impossible. I'm making arguably what people consider good money, but all these houses are going for $250,000, like $500,000. And it's like, how do you make that work? And that's when my brother, he ended up coming out to Alberta and started working out here. And I ended up moving up into the Okanagan in BC and doing some firefighting, some more landscape and that kind of thing. And then, yeah, I remember I was sitting there one day and he's like, come out here, I'll get you a job. And I'm like, you know what? I'm tired of this, like this paycheck to paycheck lifestyle. Like, yeah, I was happy. I lived in Penticton, BC, and it was my favorite place by far to live. I'm actually going back there end of April here. But I remember being like, yeah, it's a nice lifestyle here, but I want to be able to, you know, build something for myself. I want to be able to buy that house. And that's something I've noticed, especially in Vancouver, is people my age in high school, they weren't really talking about buying houses anymore. And I remember sitting down and talking to my brother about it. And I'm like, if people aren't trying to buy houses nowadays, it's just going to be like renting. That's going to be the new normal, because people are always going to be renting. And I'm like, so we can look at this two ways. Either we hustle and we go buy that first house and sweet, we hit that goal of having a house, or we hustle and we buy a bunch of houses because now it's a renter's market. And now we're renting to a bunch of people. So that's kind of what got me thinking of like, how am I going to connect the dots here? And then he gave me a shout and he's like, come out to Alberta, I'll get you a job. And arguably at that point in life, I wasn't feeling that great. So I was like, you know what? I sold all my stuff in Penticton. I packed what I could into my truck. And one weekend, I was like to my roommate in Penticton, okay, I'm gonna go to Alberta. I remember as I was driving, I think I was just coming up to Banff, and I called the hiring lady, and I was like, hey, I'm in Banff. I'm coming out there. How fast can you load me on? Right. And then she had me going for my pre-employment testing and stuff like that Monday. I think I was driving out on a Friday. So that's how I got to Alberta. And it was just the lifestyle here is so different. You come out here and you look at housing prices, and you can buy two houses for the price of one house in Vancouver.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. I'm
Yeah.
from Toronto originally, man. Like
Yeah.
outside of Toronto. I'm from Hamilton, Southern Ontario. And houses out there. So a house in Toronto, right? A shitty house in Toronto is like 1.5 million, like 1.5, right? But they're selling for two and a half, right? They're selling for
Yeah.
1 million over asking price, right?
Yeah.
That's the problem. So all the millennials in Toronto who were trying to live and buy a house couldn't afford $2 million. So they moved. I'm from Hamilton. They flooded to Hamilton, the next biggest city in the GTA.
Yep.
And the houses there were 400 to 500,000, 600,000. And they're like, yeah, we can't afford 2 mil, but we can afford 500,000, right? So all the millennials went to Hamilton and whatnot. And then the people in Hamilton, the prices started going up. Well, you can't
Yeah.
afford two, but you can afford five, six, seven. So we'll up it to seven, eight, right? Nine even. And the people in Toronto are like, yeah, I can afford nine. I can't afford two, but I can afford nine. Well, now the people in Hamilton can't afford nine. So then they went out to
Exactly.
the next city out to the west or out to the east of them, where the housing was 300,000, 400,000, 500,000. And they're like, well, we can't afford 900,000, but we can afford six, seven, right?
Yeah.
And then all the people that like Niagara Falls, well, we can afford 400, but we can't afford seven. Right. So then those people get pushed out to, Paris, Ontario or something like that, and or further east, right? And that's the problem in Ontario, right? And
Yeah.
that was absolutely insane. My dad paid 120 grand for his house, and he just sold it for 1 million,
Yeah.
right? So,
Yes.
that was wild. And out here in Alberta, like you said, man, like I can buy a house in the north end of Edmonton. I live on the north side of Edmonton. I can buy a house for 250, 300,
Yeah.
and it's a nice house. It's beautiful.
And you're right by the city. Yeah.
And I'm 10 minutes away from downtown.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I try and because I've had a lot of people message me from back home, and I try and like get them to come out here, because you don't understand it until you get here, just how much cheaper it is. Like gas alone. When I first came to Alberta, I was like, holy, in the gas savings alone, like I'm saving thousands of dollars a year. It's awesome, you know. You can get a job out here that's paying as much or more than a lot of jobs that require skilled, trades or labor back in BC, and you can get it without that here. Like you can come in like completely green, no previous experience, and as long as you have the mindset to not like give up when it gets hard, you can be making 70, 80,000, 100,000 a year in like your first year. Like, and people don't understand that from back home, right? So I try and as much as I can, I try and be like, listen, especially to the younger guys, because I wish I got in when I was like 18, 19. Like I talked to some 18, 19-year-olds. I actually just got a buddy of mine. I actually met him on TikTok. He's 19. He's on, I think, month five with Precision. And I just got him a job here. And my whole thing was like, get in now, because if I could go back when I was 19 and get in, I would.
Hell yeah. Hell
Right?
yeah.
Because it gives you such a head start on life if you can get into one of these jobs at a young age like that. And I know I can't go back and do that, but if I can get young guys who have that mindset that want to work to get into this industry, then I'm going to do that, because I know the potential for those people to become very successful in their early 20s, right? And that would be awesome, I think.
You were saying gas prices, man. I remember 8, 9 years ago, my wife and I, we took a trip to Seattle. We drove from Edmonton down to Calgary, Calgary over to the Kananaskis into like Idaho, and then came up through the south and went into Seattle for the weekend. And on the way back, we were going to go the same way, but we decided to go north and hit Vancouver and then down that way and through Jasper. And we did a big circle around the Pacific Northwest, and we stayed the night in Penticton on the way home. I had enough points. Wyndham, I think it was, and I stayed at the Ramada in Penticton. Nice. Beautiful hotel, nice views and shit. Gas, we thought gas was expensive at the time when we looked at it, Penticton, and gas was really, really off the rails then, $1.17, right? And we were just like, oh my god, this is expensive, man. And who knew a couple years later, you know, we'd be staring down the barrel of $1.17 is cheap, you know, $1.17, like less than a decade later is, I wish it was $1.17 again, right?
Yeah.
I don't even know what it is in Penticton nowadays.
Oh, it's way more than that. But on that note, I remember, I'm probably the last generation to remember this, but when, I think it was right when COVID hit, gas prices went below a dollar for a little bit there. And I remember, and that was in Vancouver. I remember just thinking, like, we're never going to see that again. Like, never. I was actually just talking to my dad because he's back in BC, and I guess the government dropped that carbon tax or whatever, the whatever tax it was. But gas prices, I don't know if you've noticed, they've gone down by like 17 cents province-wide. But I guess the Sun wrote an article on it in the Lower Mainland because gas prices didn't drop there. And I guess gas stations are keeping their prices there. So even though the government took off to 17 cents, Vancouver didn't drop. So I was talking to my dad, and I'm like, you enjoying these gas prices? And he's like, what do you mean? And I'm like, well, they just dropped by like 17 cents. Like, I'm paying, I think I paid $1.27 at Costco the other day. And I'm like, this is insane. He's like, nope, we're still paying $1.80 down here. And I'm like, that's crazy. So that's, that blows my mind.
Do you know where the Whistle Stop Cafe is?
Yep.
They were pretty infamous during COVID for keeping their business open and taking penalties for it. And they dropped their gas prices the other day to 85 cents, I believe it was, 80 cents. They did it for one day. They did it for one day to prove that, hey, you know, with all these taxes and shit on, you know, if the government were to remove all the taxes on this, and because we make the oil here in Alberta, you know, don't charge us any extra for taxes, anything on this. This is what we could charge for it and be okay. Right.
Yeah.
And so he took all the taxes off it and it dropped down to 80 cents and he kept it that way. He sold out 10,000 liters or 8,000 liters. It was 8,000 liters he sold out of in a few hours. He had to order more for that night. And he kept it at 80 cents. And I think it's back up now. But like, you know, he just did it just to prove, right? Like we make it here. We could, this is what we could hypothetically charge. Fine.
Yeah.
You know, and that's pretty crazy, man.
It is. It's, very crazy, actually, when you think about it. But I'm just grateful that it's dropped, because that $1.55 or whatever we're paying Grand Prairie wasn't nice.
No. You said you've been were kind of sort of not doing so well before you left Vancouver, right? You named that Sober Roughneck, right? So how did you get that? Why? What was happening there? And, you know, I know you've been clean and sober for a little bit here. So
yeah, well, let's take it way back. This might go a little deep, but that's okay. So when I was 14, my mom passed away overnight. It was very unexpected, very abrupt. And that's kind of what kicked off my my rebellious age, I guess. But unfortunately, it sent my dad into a pretty big depression. And it led to kind of a domino effect in our family of just things kind of falling apart. And the family kind of spreading off and doing their own thing. And I look back now, and I was the only one that that reached for the bottle in that situation. And right before I came out to Alberta, I was in a relationship that wasn't good at all. And long story short, I don't want to dive into it too much. I'm sure it's going to come out in later episodes, but long story short, I had to get out of the province just for my own mental well-being, and I ended up, moving out to Alberta. I was still drinking at the time, drinking pretty heavily, but at least I was able to kind of separate myself. And I was talking to actually a friend of mine the other day, and she went through a very similar situation, except she moved from Alberta out to Ontario, and it's more common than you think, having that relationship that actually pushes you to the point of completely relocating like that, like even a province, a full province, right? So I came out to Alberta and lived in my truck for 3 months, the first 3 months. And like I mentioned previously, I sold all my stuff. I put what I could in the truck. Fortunately, I'm just short enough so I can kind of sleep lengthwise in the cab here, but I still have to curl my knees. But yeah, no, it wasn't, the drinking wasn't good when I got out here. Like, for the most part, it hasn't really affected my employment. I knew I had to work when I came out here because I had pretty much nothing. I pretty much had to pay for my truck, be able to eat. So I was kind of like, I have to work. But I was drinking Mickey's every night in Walmart parking lots. I remember one night I was actually live on TikTok and someone doxxed me. They figured out what Walmart I was at, and next thing you know, there's like four cops around me, and they come up to the window, and I'm not even trying to hide it at this point. Like, I've got six beers probably spread out here on beside me. My keys are in my ignition. I roll the window down, and they're like, "So, somebody said you were drinking, but we can't figure out how they figured it out because I got tint all around my windows." So the cop's like, "I don't know how they would have seen that because you're in your truck." And I'm like, "Well, I was live broadcasting. That's probably what happened." And they're like, "Oh, okay." And I remember thinking, because my passion's firefighting, right? And there's certain things that they look for when you get hired on with a fire department, and a DUI would definitely put that dream of mine to rest for sure. And I remember just thinking, wow, I just got out to Alberta. I'm trying to get my life back on track. I'm sitting in a parking lot because I'm pretty much homeless. And I'm about to get a DUI for sitting in a parking lot, drinking in my truck, which I shouldn't have been doing. But I also was there for the night and wasn't planning on moving, right? I'd pull into the Walmart, I'd set up my little stove in the back, and I'd just have a few beers and just go to bed. But the officers were really good. They were like, "Well, I'll tell you what, when was the last time you had a drink?" And I'm literally sitting there with a beer in my hand. And I just kind of held it up and looked at him funny. And he's like, "Well, you know what we're gonna do? We're gonna wait with you for an hour, and then we're gonna breathalyze you." And I'm like, "Okay." So he literally pulled out his phone and he set a 60-minute timer. And I put my beer away, and then we end up just talking for an hour. And then he's like, the timer went off. We breathalyzed me. I blew zeros. And he's like, "All right, if I see you leave this parking lot tonight, we're gonna pull you over and we're gonna arrest you." And I'm like, "Fair enough. I'm not leaving the parking lot." And you would think situations like that would be enough to be like, "Hey, you gotta smarten up, right?" But I talked about this, and I've talked about this repeatedly on my lives. I went through 6 years of my life knowing I had a problem, but being able to make excuses and justify that it wasn't a big enough problem that I actually had to deal with it, right? Whether it was cutting down on drinking or maybe taking a couple weeks off here and there, or I can still go to work, so I'm fine, right? But yeah, no, fast forward, and many a late nights just drinking. And I remember the nights where, I'd get thirsty in the middle of the night, and I wouldn't reach for a glass of water. I'd reach for a beer. And that went on for, the last kind of year and a half of being in Alberta and, close calls at work, right? Seeing what that can do to you and how that can affect the people around you. And then there was a tipping point, and a lot of people kind of have an idea of what the tipping point was. I'm not even sure if I fully understand what it was. It was like, all I can say was like a coming to Jesus moment almost. I remember someone asked me about this when I was out the other night. Do you get that too? Where people come up to you and be like, you're the guy on TikTok? 'Cause
Oh yeah,
that's
I get that a lot actually. West Edmonton Mall. I can't walk around West Edmonton Mall. And I thought, my mustache is like my thing,
a
right? Everyone's like, oh,
signature. Yeah.
right. But even with the beard or even with no facial hair, people recognize, hey, there's a guy from TikTok, right?
Yeah.
And I think it's pretty cool, like I don't mind. I mean, we're there, we're asking
Yeah.
for the attention, right? So I mean, like,
Yeah.
you know what? Obviously, if I'm making videos that I think are funny for myself, mental health wise, and it's helping other people, and they're recognizing that, then hey, you know what? Come say hi. Let's have a chat. Whatever.
Right, right.
I've gotten, hey, you're the guy from YouTube once. That was pretty cool.
That's cool.
A lot of the time now, it's Facebook and Instagram, but still, like most of it is TikTok, right? So
Yeah,
yeah.
yeah. I think I really get it from TikTok because I get most of my audience from going live. But yeah, so far it's been every interaction's been super wholesome, and it's been since I've been sober, right? Because I talked about this briefly a few times on a couple lives, but before going sober, I just go on and do crazy stuff, like stupid challenges. 95% of the time, just consuming unholy amounts of alcohol, right? But yeah, no, in the last probably 2 months, especially being in Grand Prairie. Like people have come up to me everywhere I go. And I had a really wholesome experience the other night with a young lady who came up to me, and she's 30, and she, I believe, worked with childcare, but she wants to get into the patch, and we had a really good conversation about that. But going back to where I was going with that coming to Jesus moment, I had that conversation with her because she's like, what was different? Like, what made you realize that you had to do something about this? And I talked about it on the live briefly a few times, but I had gone out the night before. This might get a little emotional. I don't know exactly where I'm
Oh, good.
feeling it, but I'd gone out the night before and I got blackout drunk, and I did something that I wasn't very proud of. No one got hurt. There was never any intention of that or any of that, but it was something I wasn't proud of. And the next morning I woke up and I couldn't really remember what had happened. I just remember that I felt like garbage. Something had happened. At that time I was going through a breakup as well. And I was walking around my hotel. Shout out to the Sandman. I love that hotel chain. So walking around my hotel, there was cans and stuff, unopened cans, tequila, things like that on the shelf. And I remember just, I found myself in the bathroom looking in the mirror. And I remember just thinking, like, who are you? Like, and really asking myself, who am I? Because I think what had gotten to me a week prior, that guy that I got a job, that 19-year-old, I think he had said something about he looked up to me like a role model. And I remember that that wasn't sitting right with me, like subconsciously throughout the week. I was like, well, that's great. Like, he's 19. I got him a job. He's sticking it out. He's grateful. But I couldn't see it when I looked in the mirror. I was like, if you knew what was happening behind the curtains, you wouldn't look up to me the way that you do, right? And I remember thinking, who are you? And I was looking in the mirror and thinking about the previous night. And I just broke down. I broke down. I was on the bathroom floor, and I'm like, I need to stop. And then it was like, You know, people say when they hit a near-death experience, like memories just flash through their mind. It was like that almost, but it was memories of, you know, arguments or memories of the nights I'd show up to my family's house after I'd been kicked out, and the cops would be there waiting for me, right? Like it was memories of, I remember a police officer is like, "I'm gonna buy you a coffee tonight, and I'll drive you to some place that you can stay, but you gotta promise me you don't end up in handcuffs again." A week later, I was back in handcuffs. It's memories like that. And I was like, whoa. And it was like a bridge, two points connected. And I was like, wait a second. All these memories have one thing in common, and that was alcohol. And I used to be so mad, like at my family. I remember for my 23rd birthday, I drove from Penticton back to Vancouver to see my dad on my birthday. I got there at 4 p.m. ish, started drinking when I got there. We had dinner.
Well, you must be getting a phone call.
Yeah, just canceled it there. But yeah, so I had driven to my dad's house, started drinking, had dinner, had an argument. And this argument was one that I'd been bringing up for years. And it was coming from a place of anger and hate and resentment towards him for how he had handled my mom's passing and how he had disconnected. And I remember I would always just be demanding like apology, and he would give me an apology. He would reword it 100 times and was never good enough for me. So that night I was like, well, I'm done. I don't want anything to do with you. Keep in mind, this is still my birthday. It's probably 7 p.m. right now, and I'm drunk. I'm sitting in my truck down the road from my house or my dad's house, and I'm drunk in Vancouver. And I'm sitting there watching the clock. I'm like, all right, how sober do I have to be to drive from Vancouver back to Penticton? And then I made that drive, and I ended up getting back to Penticton. I think it was probably 4:35 in the morning. And I remember just getting back, and just my roommate and I were really close at the time, and I just broke down. And I'm like, well, that was a waste of time, waste of money, right? But that, all those memories came flooding back when I was sitting there on that bathroom floor in the hotel. And I called my dad, and I was like, listen, I don't know how it's gonna look, I don't know how it's gonna work, but I need to completely stop. You know, I didn't apologize for anything. I haven't got to that point yet. I haven't. I'm still trying to navigate this. I'm only 3.5 months sober, so there's still a lot of steps in the process to kind of fully, I want to say, reclaiming who I'm supposed to be. But baby steps. And I called him, and yeah, there's something in his voice. I think he knew that this time was real, right? Because I told you I struggled with it for like 6 years. And then after I called him, I went and posted that video that's on my TikTok, that red video about kind of like my realization. And I wanted to do that because I'm someone who I don't like letting people down, right? I don't like saying something and then doing the opposite, right? Accountability is huge for me. So I felt if I could get ahead of it and get on social media, because TikTok had already been something I was doing at the time. I didn't really find my niche necessarily, but there was enough people on there who had been watching me for over a year that I knew if I came out on TikTok, I was like, this is what I'm doing, this is what I'm going through, I would have that support from the people who knew me. And it's crazy to this day talking to some of those people who have been here for the last 2 years and how much just support I've gotten from those people, whether it's over private messages or just coming into the live, right? And it's great. And you know, one thing I firmly believed in is drinking was not my issue. It was a symptom of my issue, right? So the day I decided to go sober, I also found a therapist, And I was like, I need to find a therapist and I need to, this needs to be hand in hand. I need to quit drinking and I need to do X, Y, and Z to quit drinking. But I also need to have a therapist like ready because I know as soon as I take out, and I describe this when I talk to people, it's like a band-aid or like a trauma bandage on a wound. As soon as you take that off, she starts bleeding everywhere, right? I did firefighting for a year in BC and I was trained as a medic there. And our job is to go in and do trauma care so that person could be transported to a hospital where they will then take that band-aid off and take care of the root of the issue, right? So that's how I look at it for how I attack my dealing with sobriety. The band-aid was alcohol. I took that band-aid off. Now the hospital is going to be that therapy. It's going to be, going to meeting. It's going to be the things that I need to do to maintain and address what the root cause of my drinking was, right? So that's kind of how I've been attacking my sobriety, and it's been the only thing that's worked over the last like 9 years, and I think it is truly because I was like, I need to address why I've been drinking. And one of the coolest things that's come from this is I remember when I posted that video, my sister commented on it. And a little bit of backstory, my sister, she's younger. Growing up, her and I were the closest. I have a younger brother, he's the middle child. But my sister and I were the closest, and we'd grown apart over the years. And when my mom passed, there was a huge divide between me and my sister because she was so young that she didn't really understand what was going on. Then going through the turmoil with my dad and my brother, my brother was kind of taking my dad's side on things. My dad was like, "All right, you're the problem. You gotta get out." And of course, my sister's just gonna follow what she's being shown, right? I'm the problem, right? So it was actually pretty much her whole high school years that I didn't have like any contact with her. And that was hard. That was really hard. I remember I found out about her engagement on Facebook, not even from her. And that was heartbreaking. Because I'd realized that it had been like 6 years that I'd missed watching her grow up. But the last really good memory I had was back when I newly kicked out of my dad's place and I was over and she showed me she could touch the roof in the kitchen and she just made volleyball captain or something. And she's like 4'2", like she's short, like maybe not 4'2", 5'2", my bad. But and that was the last really good memory. And then we didn't talk for like 6 years. And I remember she commented on that video that I posted saying my mom would be proud. And I was like, wow, that's like the first I've heard from my sister in years. And then I planned to go to Vancouver for Christmas because it was right before the holidays that this all went down. And I remember talking to my dad, and he's like, "Yeah, your sister's like making sure there's not going to be any alcohol at the family like dinner. Like she's coming, her fiance's coming. They're going to bring their kid." And for the first time in 6 years, I went to a family event where there was no arguments, no fighting,
Huge.
no discussion about anything. It was huge. I was there for 3 days and I remember thinking to myself, I wish I could extend my trip, but I'd booked the round trip. And I was like, this feels good. This feels good.
I'm hoping
And
my feeling like we can get to something like that one day, like as you were saying, your mom passed away, right? And my parents split when I was six. And you know how most people, like when you split up, the parents get 50-50 and whatnot. Well, my mom moved 8 hours away, right? So I didn't get to see her much, right? I don't have any memories of cuddling with my mom on the couch ever. I don't have any. That was all locked away. There was a band-aid on that for some reason, And this past year or so, that Band-Aid was ripped off, right? And I'm bleeding everywhere, right? That was a great analogy of that, because like I'm bleeding everywhere. I'm bleeding on people I'm not meaning to bleed on, right? I had a really rough 2024, and you know, it was pretty nasty. And you know, this is the first episode of the podcast actually that's, you know, sponsored, a paid sponsorship with BetterHelp, right? And so I had actually my first therapy session with BetterHelp, and my first therapy session ever yesterday. And the therapist said to me something that like blew my fucking mind. He's like, "You're mourning the loss of your mother." Now, mourning the loss of someone, most people think they had to go to a funeral or something. They're like, "You don't have to go to a funeral to lose someone." And that was like, holy fuck, man. You know, like that's insane. And that blew my mind. And you know, I immediately, when that session was done, I booked another one, right? I'm like, wow, I gotta book another one. And you know, I'm just pumped, dude. You know, I needed therapy, but you know, I always kind of knew up here, I just didn't want to admit it. And you know, I'm pumped, dude, to actually, you know, get that done. And I've learned a lot about myself over the last couple months. I was recently diagnosed with borderline personality disorder. And so I took a class on that too and learned a lot about, so I stutter a lot when, you know, I'm paranoid or when I'm under stress. And I thought that's just because, you know, whatever, I'm stuttering. And turns out that when your body is paranoid or in high stress, your speech becomes paralyzed in a way, right? And a lot of that has to do with when I was a kid, I was constantly being questioned about what I was doing, right? Like my dad and I, he was everything to me, but like, you know, he was abusive and manipulative in a way, right? And so I was trying to put that together. And every time I start stuttering, when I'm being questioned, I do it to my wife. My wife's just talking normally to me, right? But I feel like I have to explain everything from back then. And so I start stuttering, right? And then if she's asking a question about something, to me, stuttering feels like now you think I'm lying to you because I'm trying to, right? So, I learned a lot about borderline personality disorder that I feel so understood and feel, you know, incredibly like I have a place in this world now. And like, I felt like an asshole forever, like, you know, and, you know, so shout out to, you know, BetterHelp and whatnot for, you know, helping with that. And that's incredible, you know?
Yeah. Sometimes all it takes is that first therapy session. And, from experience, like I've been going to therapy my whole life, but, you really gotta stick with it. And sometimes the benefits of going to therapy, you don't see it till down the road, but, it's not something that, you know, we as men want to do. And it's not something that, especially in our industry, is very, you know, that we're open about, right? But whether it's, you know, I did 4 years in the military, I did a year firefighting, whether that played a role into kind of accepting, you know, this idea of getting help for our mental health or not, who knows? It definitely is a huge topic in both those industries. Yeah. Thank God. I've heard that's only been kind of since the 2000s where they've been pushing that. But it really is important to just talk. That's my big thing, is just talk about what's going on. And I'm actually going to be getting my taxi driver on my podcast coming up here, Navigating Normal. But and I remember thinking, because this was when my truck was in the shop, and it was in the shop for like 2 weeks. I remember thinking, driving around with my taxi driver, hopefully my therapist doesn't hear this, but I was like, man, you're telling me for the price of this cab ride, I'm getting almost as good conversation and advice from my cab driver as I'm getting from my therapist. I still go to my therapist. I love the guy. He's honestly the first therapist I've had that I felt like sticking with, and that could go hand in hand with being sober now and realizing that.
Well, you're not
But
lying to yourself or him anymore, right? So,
right. So it
yeah.
could be the first therapist where I'm completely genuine with, and that's why I'm having such a good connection with him. Because when I was going through a rough relationship, I had a therapist, but again, it felt like I was still trying to get something out of that therapy that wasn't really benefiting me. So I wasn't really getting what I was supposed to be getting. But just being able to talk, and I think anyone who's considering therapy, like, go in like it's a confession box. Like, it's staying between you and that person. And you don't have to, feel scared to talk. It's just gonna stay between you guys. But even if the words coming out of your mouth don't make sense to you, speak. Because I remember plenty of therapy sessions where I'd go in and I would just ramble and I'd be
Yep.
left, right, and center all over the place. And at the end of it, the therapist would pull all the pieces together and be like, "So this is what you're trying to say." And I'm like, "Yep, exactly."
Boom.
Just talk.
Yep. You said, you brought up your own podcast, man, and I remember you talking about you were getting it together and putting it out and whatnot. How did you get from, hey, I'm making videos on TikTok now to, hey, I want to start a podcast. Where did that come from? That's
So that comes from a few different areas, and that's where I kind of had some ideas and I put the ideas aside and then kind of modernized the ideas. But growing up, my mom, she always wanted to write a book. And at one point she did start writing the book, and I tried for the longest time to find those first few chapters because I know they're there somewhere, but I could never find them. She started writing a book, and a lot of people don't know this about me, but I was adopted at birth. There was a lot of turmoil in that. And growing up, I was just finding out a lot about myself that I didn't know. And I found that a lot of the experiences I've had, a lot of people can relate to. And then a lot of people have come to me for kind of thoughts on things. And I'm like, well, this is kind of what I've been through. So maybe apply this in your life and it might help. So I was like, you know what? Maybe I'm gonna write a book one day. Maybe I'll do that because it's been kind of a movie in some circumstances. But then I was just sitting down and whenever it was the other day, and I was like, you know what? I love talking to people. I love hearing people's experiences. I meet so many amazing people out here in Alberta, whether it's through work, whether it's just through casual conversation on the street or TikTok, right? And everyone has their own kind of story and kind of different way they were raised and different idea of normal, hence navigating normal. So I was like, you know what? It'd be cool to get people with similar mindsets or like-minded people on a podcast, whether or not they have similar background or similar past or upbringing or not, doesn't matter. But what similarities can we find in our upbringing to put out to people? So then maybe if there's someone at home and they're 19 and they're not feeling like their life's moving fast enough and they're just laying in bed, maybe they can hear these stories and be like, you know what? I can do this tomorrow and get here, or I can go and talk to that person tomorrow and that'll make me feel this way. But if there's something that through conversation we can bring to people that kind of motivates them to, whether it's get up out of bed and go to work, or if it's take that job, or if it's get sober, like if we can do that for people, then that's awesome. And I think the podcast like style is super cool. And that's kind of where I was like, you know what? I'm gonna start a podcast.
hell yeah, dude.
2025, I came into the year. I've said this every year for the last like 4 years. I'm like, this is my year. But truly, I believe this is my year because I've come into it sober. And what I tell people when they're in my live and they're asking me about sobriety is I'm like, Can you fully reach your potential if you're poisoning your body? Because personally, I don't feel like you can. Now, don't get me wrong, I still smoke, I still put things in my body I shouldn't, but I feel like taking the alcohol out of it, at least mentally, I've hit a whole new plane of like understanding of myself. Understanding of the world. I have a whole new perspective on things. For example, I briefly mentioned it before we started filming here, but I got a $400 ticket for blowing a stop sign last night. The old me would not have handled it as well as I did. Today, I'm like, well, you know what? That wasn't very smart of me. I should have been paying more attention. That sucks, but I'm gonna deal with it, right? There's been so many events over the last 3 months that feel like they're just little like pokes. Like, okay, you're doing good, but let's see, are you really doing good?
Yeah, let's
Yeah,
test.
just a little test. And I'm like, they're just flying off my shoulder. And I'm like, the only reason that's happening is because I managed to take out the poison out of my body and do some healing in my mind. And now I feel like there's nothing really that's gonna put me
Man,
back to there.
I don't know if you've heard it from your peers or not, your family members, you've probably heard it from and whatnot. But dude, I'm fucking proud of you, man. Like, that's shit, he's gone. Yeah, no, you got a call or what? Another one?
Yeah,
Yeah,
my
I'm
phone's
fucking
blowing
proud
up
of you,
right
man. I'm fucking proud of you,
now. Yeah,
bro. Like that's good, man. As men in our industry, men and women in our industry is very well known for, people that make money blowing it stupidly on, parties and things
Yeah.
and whatnot. And a lot of the people in our industry, and you mentioned it a little bit before, in our industry it's hard to talk mental health, right?
Yeah.
I believe the industry has come a long way in the last couple of years, even from when I got in and whatnot. That's why my content journey started. So I was having a shit time mentally in 2020, like everyone else. I was working my life away and I needed to laugh and I couldn't find anything to make me laugh. So I created what made me laugh, right?
Yeah.
And other people join in on that. And then the podcast, the podcast is here because I like to talk to people. It's how I learn.
Yep.
And also, if I can sit down with other people that are like me, that are also going through things and share our common stories, like that way, and our live events, and also people from all different industries, blue collar, like so oil and gas, regular construction, a carpenter, an electrician, a welder, and we can kind of put forth like a little, hey, this is what I do, this is how I got into it, this is my journey, and this is
Yeah.
why. It creates a good conversation, and if anyone's listening that, oh, do I want to join the blue collar world and what do I want to do? Well, hey, I talk to everybody. So come find
Yeah.
out what they go through, the kind of money they make, what they experience, and
Yeah.
just that, their experiences and stuff. And I feel like this podcast has been good for that. And man, like I can tell, like, dude, your podcast would kind of be used for the same thing.
Yeah.
And do it, man. The hardest part is just starting.
Exactly.
The
Exactly.
first Most podcasts don't make it past the first 10 to 15
That's
episodes,
what we were
right?
talking about. Yeah.
We were talking
Yeah.
about that on live, I believe. And the first 10 to 15 episodes, that's really test your dedication to it, right? Because like
Yeah.
no one's really watching yet. You haven't really, got a listener base.
Yeah.
The downloads might be slow. Who cares? Don't do it for what other
No.
people might think about it. Do it for what you want out of it, right?
Exactly.
Have those conversations for you. I'm 120 episodes in now, right? And that's
Yeah.
one episode a week, 120 weeks, man. That's pretty mind-blowing to me, man. And
Yeah.
dude, just do it and stick with it.
Yeah.
You'll go places. And like I said, BetterHelp sponsors the podcast now. We've had Steady Freddy. My favorite one is, okay, do you know what viscosity is? And as a roughneck, you probably definitely do.
Yeah.
So, in your own words, what's viscosity?
I don't know if I could define it, to be honest, in my own words.
We have a good time with it, right? It's basically the
Yeah.
thickness of a fluid, right?
Yeah.
And when you're putting mud downhole on a rig, you know, if it needs to be more viscous or less viscous, you know, you just take more or take away more. And where I'm going with that is the podcast is also sponsored by the Mudman, the longest sponsor of the podcast, right? He's been sponsoring for over 100 weeks now. And, you know, shout out to the Mudman, you know, for all your drilling fluid and laboratory testing equipment needs, man. I fucking love that guy. You know, he, in the first 14 weeks of this podcast, the audio was terrible. You know, I was in camp, so I was having service issues that had a lot to do with it. But he recognized that. He got me a mic and a headset, you know, here has that, you know. And then just this past summer, he's like, how else can we make the show better? Well, I don't edit. I couldn't edit, right? And now I do a bunch of editing, but he's like, MacBook Pro. And he gave me a MacBook Pro. He gave me a MacBook Pro for the podcast. And now I edit. Nice. I record on it. I don't need a headset and a mic anymore because it's a MacBook Pro. They are everything. So that guy, man, I love that guy. And he's been here for me for more than just, you know, things for the podcast. He's giving me advice and he's talking to him last night. And, you know, he gives me ideas for content sometimes. And, you know, I love that guy. So
that's awesome.
Mudman, www.mudmanmarket.com, you know, and shout out to Brian. I love him so much.
Yeah, that's awesome. Yeah. No, it's, I'm pretty excited. I'm going to be filming my first episode tomorrow. Initially it was supposed to be this past weekend out in White Court, but work keeps extending my stay up here in GP. I actually ran into one of my followers last night when I was out, and she's got a pretty interesting backstory, so I'm pretty excited. And we're setting up tomorrow night to film episode 1. So
are you trying to do all your episodes in person?
Ideally.
I've done a couple in person, man. And the in-person ones, like two of them in person, so 120, 118 of them have been done virtually. And the in-person ones are fun. They're a lot of fun. You know, the first one I had Ryan Wiersma. I don't know if you know who Ryan Wiersma is, but he worked in the oil patch. He's an author here. He writes the Alberta Pipeline Diaries, Alberta Forever. And he was a roughneck and pipeliner. And he came out and built all his money. He built up his bank account, and then he went and took it over to Ecuador, built a house, and now he lives over there, right? And escaping Canada pretty much. And I had him over here, and the first time I had him in person, I had like a bunch of twisted tees and some suckers, and I'm like, hey man, I want a sucker, you know. And it was good, man. It was good. Doing in person is a lot of fun.
I'm super excited about that. And then hopefully when I get back down south to Leduc, I'll be able to set up my own kind of studio. But baby steps. And I've been trying to pump out this podcast this month. That's the goal. So I was like, as soon as I saw the opportunity to get episode 1 up, I'm going to get it filmed off tomorrow. And then I have a good friend of mine. Shout out to Tony. He's offered to edit the first 100 episodes for me. So I'm gonna fire it off to him. He's also one of my good friends that I'm trying to get out to Alberta, so he might come out and visit soon. But it's gonna be good. I'm really excited for 2025. It's gonna be a big year, I think, all around.
Absolutely, buddy. Absolutely. No, the podcasting game's a lot of fun, man. Enjoy that ride.
Yeah.
You know, is exhausting and tiring, and as much work as it takes. You know, like we're over an hour in right now. We've been talking. We talk a little bit over there. Talk a little bit coming up. We did an hour here or more, and then, you know, editing and putting it out and pushing it for the next week after. Oh man, you're looking at like, you know, probably looking at a good 15, 20 hours altogether for each episode, right? And it's a lot of work on top of the work.
No. Yeah, that's why right off the bat I'm like, listen, Tony, I need you on this one. I need you to edit, because I've got as soon as I get pulled back to the field, it's gonna be like I can touch nothing right now. So it's gonna be all on you. But he's a good guy, so I'm looking forward to working with him on this as well, and kind of seeing where that goes too. So
nice, man. That's awesome. So like, you know, this might be a little bit of a weird question, I guess, but like, if you could, you know, go back and give, you know, 14-year-old Tanner any advice, what would you give him?
14-year-old me, if I could give myself advice at 14, I'd definitely tell myself, hold your family closer. Don't hold as much anger towards people around you, and try and communicate what's upsetting you, right? Because I remember my younger years, resentment put a lot of stress on my family relationships, and those are years that I can't get back, right? Those are the prime years, at the time you see your parents every day, hopefully, or you get to spend more time with the people that matter. And now here I am working hundreds of kilometers away from my family, and if I get to see my dad 2 or 3 times a year, that's a good one, right? So if I could tell my 14-year-old self something, it'd just be, don't let the anger ruin those times you have with the people that matter, because you don't know where life's taking you, and there could be a lot bigger of a gap before you get to have those moments again. So
Hell yeah, man. Yeah, that's good. That's good, man. I don't want to keep you too much longer, buddy. I know you're in the shop there. You probably got to get back to work and answer some phone calls to your brother there. Speaking
yeah,
of
I'm popular right now, so
yeah,
a lot of
but
articles.
yeah, so I end the podcast, the same way every time, one last question. And it's like, if you Mount Rushmore has four of the most influential people up on the rock, and if you could have your own Mount Rushmore, four people you look up to, inspire to be here, that inspire you, who would they be and why?
Oh, that's a good question. This is going to be an interesting answer. I want to say my future self, because I know my future self is going to be an amazing person. And as the person I am today, I'm striving to be that person, whatever that looks like in the future. And I come up with that answer because, based off my childhood and things I've gone through, it's been hard to find role models, right? I've kind of always had the mindset of you need to be who you want to become. And so when I picture the person I look up to, it's going to be myself in 10 years, because I know that person's going to look back, and there's another phone call. That person's going to look back and be like, you were here 10 years ago, and now look where you are, right?
Yeah.
So that's my answer to that one. A little bit different, but
That's good. That's a good one, man.
I'll
Do you
stick to
got
that.
three more or just you?
Yeah. Just me. Just
Ah,
me.
that's a huge goal to strive for, man. Good for
Yeah.
you. Good for you, man. I love that.
Yeah.
I love that, man. I'm the same way. I'm the same way. I never had any role models growing up, right? My dad and my mom split when I was six. My
Yeah.
dad and I It was just my dad and I for like maybe a few months before he got another woman, right? And then, she was abusive, and for they were together for 20 years, and she didn't like my dad's kids at all. And then they had a kid together, and she was sort of abusive to her as well. And then I watched my dad with infidelity. He cheated on everyone that he could, and I was in the room a couple of times. I was fucking 8 or 9 when I saw some of it, right? And I never had any good role models growing up, right? And my one of my role models is upstairs right now. They just got home. It's my wife, right? She's kind of That's another thing the therapist said to me the other day, man. It's like, your wife doesn't need to be your the male figure in your life. And she what she sort of is, even though she's not a male, right? She's given you something to look up to, right? And look, yeah.
No, it's interesting. Don't get me wrong. I love my dad, but I think the qualities he has, I've definitely taken, especially the good qualities. But ultimately, yeah, I've been very much on my own for most of my life, and that's okay. There's got to be people kind of like that in this world, I think. And it just goes back to, I hope people can look up to us and be like, you know what? Whatever it is that they've got, if I can get a piece of that and it helps me move forward, then I feel like we've accomplished great things for people.
Oh
So
yeah. Hell yeah, man. I love that. My dad's up on My Rock, but not for, you know, for what most people would have their dad on The Rock for. My dad's up on The Rock as a beacon of, you know, what not to do, right? Like, yeah, when I look up and see him there, I want to go the opposite way.
Yeah.
Right. And yeah, and that's why my dad's up on My Rock. And, you know, going through my own mental health struggles this last year, or more than a year, but really just, you know, experiencing them this past year, learned a lot about what my dad was possibly going through, and, you know, how he didn't have anyone beside him to help him through that. And how, you know, he might've did his best with what he was given, and he, you know, how easily, because of the, at what point in his life he went through that and where the people around him were at, how easily discarded he was.
Yeah.
And that breaks my fucking heart.
That's interesting you bring that up, because, you know, we could talk about this for probably another hour and a half, but, with BPD, as you know, I've done my own fair share of research on that, but you really do have to look at those influencing factors from parents or people around you when you were growing up, right? So that's huge that you see that and recognize that, because, yeah, you don't, like, your dad could have gone through something very similar to what you're going through or what you're feeling, right? And that could have been why things happen the way they happened. And I think, you know, again, people, society's opening up a little bit more to mental health and the effects that, you know, the younger generation are picking up from things their parents went through, all that, right? And they're opening up to that, but it's still such a taboo topic. And I think it's good to talk about it more, especially with BPD, because there's not much awareness on that and there's not much knowledge on that. And I feel like I'm guilty of it as well. You know, when I first was experienced to it, I would label everyone who had it as that one circumstance. And then, you know, with my healing, I started doing some more research and kind of understanding it a little bit better. And it's just, it's like having depression, clinical depression, you know, but people are their own individuals still, but they just have this that they're dealing with, right? Absolutely. So I definitely think more awareness to it for sure all around. And I encourage anyone who watches the podcast to look into it and read about it. If they have that in their life, whether it be a close family friend or a friend or someone in their life, or even if they're interested on borderline personality disorder, like, do your own research, right? Just understand it. Because not as someone who has it personally, but as someone who has people in my life who have had it, just understanding it makes the difference.
Absolutely, brother. Absolutely. Man, thanks for coming on the podcast, you know, and as you're going to experience it on your own journey here. Every episode I get excited to record, you know, I'm pumped for it. It's my baby. And then, you know, I love listening to it back. You know, there's more time. I listen to it back a couple of times, once for editing and then once for, you know, to pick teaser trailers and then once just to enjoy, you know? Yeah. So, you know, that's over 4 hours right there. Right. And so, you know, we have a good time, man. So, you know, enjoy the process, man. And I can't wait to hear what you come up with, dude. It's going to be fun.
I'm super excited to see where this goes. And we'll definitely do one for my podcast when I'm back south.
Hell yeah. Hell yeah, man. I live in Edmonton. Right. You know where I'm at.
Yeah. We're neighbors. All right. I'll let you go. I'll talk to you later.
All right, brother. Hey, phone calls down. You stay frosty.
Cheers, buddy.
Cheers, buddy.